How's it going?
It's going good.
Okay.
I really felt good the day I left here, and my I know this stuff's helping.
Well, was that treatment number three last time? Because we did two,
I think so.
We did two kind of general distal points, and then that third one we did more of that right-sided back pain, leg pain, as we've done in the past, right?
That's it. Yeah.
And scaling things up that way as we're getting the nutrition is the key to success here.
So, no restless legs, no pain in the legs the last 3 days. Kind of went off the scales last night. I ate a bunch of food I shouldn't have. We went over the top. But I said, okay, tomorrow we'll start over again. So, I mean, it wasn't awful.
Well,
but,
you don't.
Yeah, you know, I get it.
Yeah, but you don't. You know, you gotta. You got to look past the superficial emotions,
right,
which are a distraction,
mm-hmm,
and you got to ask yourself that question of what was the issue underneath that. And, you know, I think I was telling you a week or so ago that, the way to do that is just to say, okay, what is it that's bothering me that made me want to, you know, distract myself this way or cause some symptoms this way?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I've been recently reminding you, you know, the bullshit excuse that we tell ourselves to prevent that realization is, I just wanted a treat. I just wanted some comfort. I just deserve to have some of this,
mm-hmm,
right?
That's the feeling.
Yeah. But the feeling is a lie. The feeling is a cover story, right? Now, I mean, I'm sure I've told you this story before, but I use the example being the sugar-free cheesecake here, okay? Because it'll be a sugar-free cheesecake, it'll be something else. And, you know, when we saw this, you know, I can remind you how this worked for you this way too, that the person coming in, you know, we're working on this stuff, and to begin with, they're gonna express a virtuous commitment to the process and say, "Oh, I don't need to have any bullshit here. I'm eating meat and veggies. I'm feeling really good. This is a really satisfying way to eat." And I'll tell them, like, "Okay, but don't you know some sugar-free ice cream sometimes? I don't think I need any of that. Really, you're going to sit there and just stare at other people as they're having treats? Are you going to sit in the corner with a dunce hat? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What, the holidays? You're not going to participate? These are rituals. These are important.
Yeah.
You know, go get some sugar-free ice cream. You know, do you like a cheesecake? It's a regular cheesecake is just cream cheese and sugar and eggs. Okay, real easy then. Cream cheese and Truvia and eggs, for example,
mm-hmm,
by the grocery store, it'll work, you know.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, I'll try that, you know, right? And they'll come back and they'll be like, oh, you know, that sugar-free ice cream, it was great. That sugar-free cheesecake, it hit the spot, you know, for the birthday last week, we just did that. It was great. You know, I did some almonds, instead of a crust on the bottom, put some
mm-hmm
strawberries on top, you know. Now, part of this is because, like I said, you know, you want to have some treats sometimes and you want to participate in things.
Yeah.
But also, I am building a case that I can lay out and get my conviction later on that this person is haplessly walking into my trap with, because I do this all day and they don't know that, okay? And the trap being that I know in 3 weeks that we've made some really good progress that's challenging to this patient and their way of dealing with their life and their emotions and everything else. And so there's this unconscious desire to sabotage it, right? And that desire is connected to the underlying issues and the past trauma and the, you know, whatever this stuff is, right? And so what will happen is when the circumstances sort of resonate with that past trauma, and that activates this latent system of sabotage for control. The person will come in, you know, after 3 weeks, "Oh, we're doing really good. Yeah, you know, but I kind of messed, you know, the other day we went out to eat. I ate, you know, kind of something like you just said, right?" And often maybe it's just timing, but quite a lot of it'll be some stressor, like, "Oh, you know, oh, this is what, there was a fight in the house. There was, you know, whatever. I was pissed. I thought I deserved to just go out, relax, enjoy my..." There'll be a real virtue claim in this statement where the person tells me how bad something was and then tell me they needed to do this thing in a way that they're trying to out-strategize me challenging them. So I can't say, What do you mean you ate that thing? Like, I just told you what I was through. Like, you're not, you don't think I deserve? Like, when after, didn't you hear what happened? Like, somebody was suffering, you know, somebody died, you know, extreme cases of like, and it's, and, you know, there'll be this virtue claim in there, right? But the problem with that virtue claim is it's based on the claim that the comfort was what it was that helped with the stressor, right? But we've already demonstrated you can have that comfort without the symptoms. We already said eat the sugar-free ice cream. We already said eat the sugar-free cheesecake. They already said that was great, and it didn't cause diarrhea. It didn't cause my back pain to flare up. It didn't cause whatever other symptom that we're treating.
Right.
We've already demonstrated you can have the cause. You can have the comfort without the symptom. But in this case, 100% of the time, when they felt like they weren't in control and they were stressed out, they chose the food that gave them the symptom. They didn't make a sugar-free cheesecake. They went straight to the grocery store and bought the bullshit Sara Lee cheesecake, which isn't as good as the one that you baked yourself with, you know, with Truvia, right? And so now we got to look at this analytically and say, okay, well, we got a problem here because there was an assumption that it was the comfort that was the useful thing here. Seems like it's the symptom, right? Mm-hmm. This is the issue, right? Now, one way that this is applied to you is, you know, we had that conversation working through some of that stuff, and you know, for you it was like a candy bar here and there, and you'd say like, you know, I was stressed out, I had that candy bar, and yeah, I felt crappy, and my symptoms, you know, happened, and boy, the back pain and the leg pain would flare up, right? Mm-hmm. And we had this conversation, right? And then you do a little better with it, and lo and behold, you know what? Even when you didn't sabotage it with diet, you still got the symptom. You'd still have a flare up in the leg pain, right? And that's because your brain can do it without the bullshit excuse, right? Okay. It's actually your brain that's doing a lot of this stuff as a way of distracting you and a way of trying to protect you from emotions and situations you learned weren't safe. Now, this is how it all connects, and this is how we can follow that rabbit hole to get to what those core issues are. Because we can ask a question like this and say, you know, in whatever situation, you know, we can say, you know, a couple years ago when you're in the thick of it more with the Michael situation or something, like, and say, okay, why, like, here, we just showed you how these symptoms work. You understand how it works now. Here's the symptom. You thought it was, there's just something wrong in there. It's just a mechanical thing. It's not connected to anything. We just unpacked it and understood it and realized it has an agenda. And this is how mind-body symptoms work. And because it has an agenda, we can see what it's up to. When does it do this? When do you need to have that distraction? What is it that your brain learned it needed to protect you for? That's how we get to the core of issues. Mm-hmm. And that's how, in the example I'm giving you, not really Vietnam, right? Mm-hmm. For you, it's the childhood stuff. It's your dad. It's the drinking, right? And to some degree, that can be a little prescriptive because that's kind of how that always goes. But it doesn't work for me just to tell you, oh, right, Vietnam, that's bullshit. Ah, it's this. I got to lead you there. You got to have this experience. I got to help you. I got to help you unravel that and experience it that way. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So.
Sure does.
So anyway, so here we are in the present, and so now it's just the same process that, you know, under, you know, whatever, you know, getting off course a little bit yesterday. Like, intellectually, you know, you don't mind eating this way. You feel good when you eat this way, and you know that there's treats to have, there's whatever to have, right?
Right, right.
But this is a, you know, the way that this works and the way that the unconscious agenda here works is it's kind of like classical conditioning, you know, classical conditioning.
Oh, okay.
The Pavlov's dog stuff, right? You know, so the everything I just said, the understanding how it works, the following that rabbit hole, getting back to those core unsafe emotions and circumstances. We've been through that. We all know that, right? But the point is that little program in your brain, it doesn't just go away. It still wants to kind of roll in any of these circumstances, right?
Oh,
and it just takes, you know, just some attention, just regular consideration and maintenance towards that. You know, the same way, you know, in the classical condition example, you know, you have an animal, you got a dog that you took on off the streets, mm-hmm. you know, and it's, you're trying to nurse this thing back to health and give it food, and this dog does not trust you, okay? Uh-huh. You know, you try to feed it, it's going to flinch. Well, you build up experiences that it's going to get trust you more and more.
Right.
10 years later, this dog is still going to probably be a little skittish, you know, compared to some puppy that you, you know,
took from day one.
And it had just this experience, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't worried about anything, you know.
Yeah.
So this is the same, you know, we have the same limbic system as the dog here, right? And that's what we're dealing with. And so, you know, in this case, you know, our limbic systems are this dog. We always have to be aware of, like, this is what it's been through. This is the way it thinks. There's going to be this latent program that's going to be triggered, right? And then, you know, in a circumstance like this, this is just a nice example to review this. We don't really care that much if you screwed it up a little bit yesterday. And like you said, you're going to get back on track,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
But it's a good reminder of how you handle these situations, how you think about that. And the easy intervention, after my lengthy explanation here,
right.
is that you just spend some time thinking about that. And you say, okay, you know, what was it yesterday that, what did it remind me of, or why now, or what circumstances might be related? Why did I feel like I needed to distract myself? And just that simple question of, okay, well, what is it that's bothering me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can come in here, we can talk about it, you can journal, you can go on a walk,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, back to the basic point I've been making here. A big challenge for any patient I see is that, you know, people do all this trauma work where they're, you know, they're acting like the process is to focus on the symptom. When that's, you know, the brain wants to know why you're doing something. You got to focus on what the goal is, right? You have to have a plan that says, okay, you can't just say, oh, I want my diabetes under control. I don't want to have my leg pain. For what? It's working for you to have diabetes and have leg pain. That's great in your present circumstances and environment. That's an excellent stress management system that you've conspired with your limbic system to create. Okay, so you're going to give that up? No more security blanket here?
Mm-hmm.
And then why? What are you going to do that's worth it to your brain? You have to have a goal that's kind of an emotional goal, something that's meaningful, something that you enjoy, you know? And this is like we talked about last time, and you're thinking about, here's the stuff you've done. You know, this is part of the problem of therapy. It's like, it's not meaningful for you to go talk to somebody else and they, you know, tell you, oh, you shouldn't feel bad, and oh, I'm sorry you went through this, and oh, the PTSD from Vietnam.
Yeah.
You got to say, like, you enjoy that group work you did. You enjoy doing that work with veterans. You enjoy doing that kind of outreach, volunteer work, whatever. So that's, you know, we got to keep, you know, keep the, all that stuff in mind as what we're doing, why we're doing it, how we're doing it. So,
yeah, it's something you've said over the many times, but it hit, you know, last time or whatever. You know, I think you're referring to behavioral thing. You know, how we
mm-hmm.
how we eat. It's like you were just saying, I had a bad day. I'm going to go have some cake and coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so you can try and make yourself
mm-hmm.
feel good and comfortable. But it doesn't work. You know,
mm-hmm.
then you feel guilty afterwards. And why did I do that? So, yeah, it is behavior.
Mm-hmm. Well, the behavioral part of it is the cover story, right? And that, you know, that's what the point of that is. And so, you know, there's a famous quote I like to modify and say that the greatest trick that the limbic system ever pulled was convincing the world it didn't exist, right? If you're familiar with the quote.
Yeah.
So, but this is the limbic system's agenda. It's that we don't understand what's there, you know, and to have the cover story as this behavioral story, right? And the point of the, of course, the behavior is the problem, but it's not behavioral, it's emotional. Everything is an emotional issue. Here's the example this week, okay? Who is it, like, we treat health, we treat trauma. We can't even call it mental health anymore. We gotta call it behavioral health, okay?
Oh,
we're just focusing on your behavior. We're not emotions and unconscious agendas. That's some kooky, you know, Freudian psychoanalytics. We don't deal with that stuff anymore, right? Well, how are we doing now that we've done this,
mm-hmm.
you know, we've rebranded this as behavioral health?
Mm-hmm.
What are our rates of any problem? We have a crisis in every form of, you know, mental health, right?
It's falling apart.
Doesn't seem to be working, right? And the idea that it's behavioral, not emotional. Like, here's my example. Are we going to apply this to politics? So do we think politics is driven by behavior, or do we think politics is driven by emotion? Like yeah. I think we know the answer to that,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yesterday was a shock to me.
It's sure not a shock to me, you know? This is the era we're in. I mean, I just think it's a wild thing for people your age. You've been through this.
Yeah.
You've been through the 60s.
I know it.
You were in Vietnam. This is, you know, and to think...
Race riots.
To think that in our political system and our media system, that we can engage in this kind of outrage media,
yeah.
And this isn't going to happen is foolish, right? And that's a statement that I think is quite accurately generalized and not applied to any particular political party or whatever, you know? That's what our culture has been doing. We have a culture of blaming others, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I,
So, you know, I mean, that might tie it all together here with, you said it was, you know, yesterday you were not eating great, right? So.
Yeah, it might have.
If there's ever a recent.
Yeah, that's really recent, but I.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, all I've been through, I guess I don't know if shocked is a word, but just extremely disappointed that a guy like he was just talking. That's all. Just talking. Gave his viewpoint. He counterpoint.
Mm-hmm.
He never. He was an asshole. Well, I think that, it's just a shame.
I think that point has been made pretty well, you know, in the media here.
Yeah.
That, like, wait a second. Like, certainly this person said some things that maybe more than half of the population would think some of the things this guy said was pretty wild, right? But. These are tough issues, but the point is the we can consider, you know, different aspects of that, including the fact that this is how you're supposed to do it. He's not shouting at people. He's making points. He's explaining where his arguments come from, and you know, right. But like I said, I mean, most of the population don't think we should go back to 1850. Like, most people don't think that. You know,
no, they don't.
So, what has been quite dismaying is the immediate framing of this as a sides issue, including from the president. You know, 5 minutes later said, this is Democrats who did this. This is evil Democrats doing this.
Right.
First of all, I mean, just as a dumb statement, Democrats do very dumb things too. Evil is not specific to a political party we should be considering here.
My gut feeling is this, well, obviously I have to be somewhat crazy, but he's had some wild notion about doing this and probably done a lot of other things, whoever did this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it as a conspiracy. I think this guy was just nuts.
Yeah. Probably a 21-year-old who randomly went and bought a rifle at Walmart and an hour later could go shoot somebody that they were pissed off at.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, for any of this stuff, it's like that. You have to be really deep psychological problems when you take the step like this. You know, and so a normal rational person would not think of doing something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually their motives when they do this is so weird, you just scratch your head. What?
Yeah. But there's been quite an alarming amount of divisive comments.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that this is a political that we should politicize this is definitely. So it doesn't seem like we're going to be turning down the temperature here. Doesn't seem like we're going to get out of the ditch on this anytime soon, does it? Seems like we're just going to pour gasoline on it. So.
Yeah. And you never really get the story. You get the headlines, you know. It takes years a lot of times to find out.
Yeah.
And sometimes
you
never know.
Well, yeah, but certainly. You know, I don't know how much we care about, like, understanding any given case's details.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more interested in the kind of I mean, same thing I said with the health issues. I'm more interested in the emotions behind it, the psychology behind it, and the sociology involved. I mean, that's where the real issues. Not a behavioral problem, it's an emotional problem, you know? And so, you know, for me, like, it's a similar kind of analogy I'd make to the two food and diet issues. Like, okay, who are you supposed to listen to? Okay, you can come in and say, you know, I've been watching MSNBC and all this, and I'm pissed off at Trump, and then you could be watching, or the next guy coming, Fox News. These fucking liberals, look what they just did, you mm-hmm. know, and whatever, the opposite agenda, you know?
Right, right.
I wouldn't agree with either of those perspectives, but I'd also say, if the person said, you don't agree with it? Where should I be going for my news? It's kind of like you asked me where I should be going for nutrition advice. Mm-hmm. I don't, it's good luck. So, good luck finding and it's just for the same reason, because sugar sells, you know, whether it be in snack food or the sensationalism in the media,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
It's the same issue. I blame the public, not the food companies and not the media companies. You know, you want nutrition, fucking buy it. And quit blaming General Mills for putting Red 40 in your Fruit Loops. Because mm-hmm. if it doesn't glow in the dark, mm-hmm. Americans won't buy it. Right. You know?
Yeah.
So.
No. We don't take any personal responsibility. It's always someone else's fault.
Right. And this is what we should consider in politics.
Yeah, I know.
You know, more so than what our personal inclination is towards, you know?
But I don't think it's just going to get worse and worse. I remember, even with all the politics and stuff, they were still civil to each other for the most part. No, mm-hmm. it's just
if I may,
a complete breakdown.
If I may do some, as we've talked in the past, how is this different than history? And this stuff is always a cycle, you know? And we've been through it before. You know,
that's true too.
I mean, again, this is the 60s in Vietnam. That was probably worse than now. I mean, you know, this isn't the Zapruder film is one problem we have. Okay.
No.
This is, don't watch the videos. Okay. Cause there's, it's all in HD, you know, in our new, era of political assassinations. But you know, I mean, there before the 60s in Vietnam, I mean, we had yellow journalism in the late 19th century and, you know, crazy politics in the Civil War, like, you know,
yeah,
40
yeah.
years before that. And I mean, it's, you know, and we go back in time, you know, we see the same stuff, right? You know, the reason why we read history is this is who we are,
yeah.
right? So.
I always think of this quote in Ecclesiastes, which has been done, has already been done, that
yeah.
which will be done.
I think you've said that quote before. Right. So, you know, we got to go through it apparently, and it's got to be on TV, and people got to, you know, do some stupid shit before they say, okay, maybe we get over this sides thing. Maybe we understand that, like, you know, people have to, talk to people they disagree with, and that's actually how we solve problems. That's how about how we come up with different ideas.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So don't get bent out of shape about it. That's just planet Earth.
You know? It's just sad.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. But that, you know, that was a pretty good thorough conversation about, you know, the health stuff and the news and the media and everything. You know, so. That's the kind of challenges, though, you know, as you are just focused on your diet, on your symptoms. We get the diabetes under control, we get the pain under control, and, you know, there's going to be challenges, whether it be the circumstances that you're in is going to resonate with the old stuff, or the
yeah.
turn on the TV and the circumstances there are going to, and for the same reason, it's going to kind of trigger that latent program that says, oh, this is, you know, this is bad stuff. We can't handle that. We need some kind of distraction. You know, we need to protect ourselves from these old emotions, right? And so,
just kind of be alert at
And as we know, and as patients always say, you know, if we refer to that as resistance, the resistance to feeling those emotions, when we understand that the distraction is BS, and we do what we call, and you know, the basic description of it in mindfulness is, you sit with it. You say, okay, what's bothering me? I need to just sit with that, right? it's not that bad, right?
Yeah.
It's you know, people will frequently tell me like, wow, it was the resistance was way worse than the sitting with it, you know? So.
Yeah, it's you have to be alert to what's triggering this stuff, and
yep.
And then think about that. Okay, kind of like an alcoholic, you have a fight with your wife and you go down to the bar. Well, no, that's not the right way to do it, but you know, and in the same sense, I'm depressed. I think I'm gonna have some ice cream. I think, why do I need ice cream? Anyway, my something else I gotta tell you, I've been off the nighttime insulin for 3 nights now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was crashing so low.
Yeah.
And I like to see that.
Yeah, well,
they even said, we want to get you off.
And we talked about needing to be careful with that when you're cutting out carbs. That you don't want to get really your blood sugar too low. So, well, you're making pretty quick progress. So the goal here is not to avoid the sabotage or the distraction. The goal, that's going to happen, right? The goal is to practice that, you know, not engaging in the drama,
mm-hmm.
of understanding what's underneath it, and then sitting with that and unlearning that old, conditioned response.
Decades.
Yep.
Decades. So I'm not going to turn it around overnight.
No. I mean, and you don't have to. There's not a perfect version of Craig who doesn't do this stuff. But, you know, a year from now,
right.
when you've kind of reached some goal, you know, there's always some element of that latent program. But it's not, you know, you're not curing yourself. You are understanding yourself, and you're having control over those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, you'll have a little bit here and now and then, but you're not back into the same boat with pain, with diabetes, whatever, and that it's tied to some, you know, meaningful things that you're doing in your life that you want to be doing. You know, that's the course we're plotting here. That's where we're headed for. So.
Okay. Remember you told me, I remember talking to you about how my blood sugar will be really low and I'll get up and I'll be walking around and it goes up. Did you tell me that what's happening is there's not a lot of fat, so it's, or it's releasing sugar for energy to me?
It's a symptom of insulin resistance, and the fact that when your blood sugar gets low, because of the insulin resistance, your body's not able to switch over to burning fat until your next meal.
Oh.
And so instead your liver is dumping glycogen into your bloodstream is what happens in that case. And it's just a normal part of that process. And as we get the inflammation down, get the insulin resistance down, you see that in your A1C number, that'll be less of a problem.
Okay.
So, okay. I mean, it's not just even a diabetes thing, you know?
Oh.
I mean, that kind of happens anyways. That's just a metabolic process.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, let's say if I wasn't diabetic, my blood sugar was really good, and I go eat a big hot fudge sundae at Dairy Queen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't have diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Would my blood sugar shoot way up and come right down, or would my body catch that and not let it go that
high? No, it would shoot up.
It would, okay.
Yeah, but it would it would shoot up and come down for either the healthy person or the diabetic. The difference is what happens for the diabetic when it comes down, okay? Because the healthy person that would come down, they wouldn't be hungry, and they wouldn't have low energy, and their liver wouldn't need to dump so much glycogen, because what would happen instead is they'd be burning fat.
Oh.
That's what the diabetic's not doing. And
oh,
so they get those other things. They get those symptoms. They got low energy. They got cravings for carbs in particular. And their liver is delivering those carbs, if you can't get them through the mouth, by dumping that glycogen into your bloodstream, right? In our society, it's not just diabetics, it's everybody who's insulin resistant, right? The amount of insulin in our bloodstream, which you take an average, you know, healthy adult, even independent of their A1C, if you take somebody who said, your A1C is 5.2, you're fine, and you're not diabetic at all. Okay, but if we compared them to somebody in 1960, they still have 3 times the insulin in their bloodstream.
Really?
Yeah. Just because, you know, this is a population-wide changes that has happened with,
we have
mostly
3 more times more insulin
something
now
like that.
Than
yeah, something like that.
People born in 1960 or
right.
Whatever? Okay.
See, we don't measure insulin. right? You don't know what your insulin, you know what your blood sugar is, you know yeah. what your A1C is, yeah. right?
Okay.
We only measure insulin like in research. It's not a, the doctor, you don't go to your doctor and say, oh, how much insulin's floating around in my bloodstream,
really? Okay.
right?
Okay.
But in studies they've done this and they've said, oof, boy, it's not just diabetics. We're, whatever we're doing, it's caused, you know, much more insulin resistance in everybody. It's, that's the amount of insulin you have in your bloodstream shows how insulin resistant you are, right? So your A1C shows how much, how long, how much you've had elevated blood sugar for. That's a different number. It's related, but it's not exactly correlating here, is the point. So you're, the more you have high blood sugar in your bloodstream,
yeah.
the higher, that, that's what makes your A1C go up.
Okay.
Right?
Right, right.
But let's say your blood sugar goes up and your body brings it down quickly, so that doesn't happen. The point is that it, we used to be able to do that with a small amount of insulin. Now somebody who's still doing that successfully, so their A1C isn't very high, is doing that with a lot more insulin.
Oh, okay.
So.
So everyone now is more insulin resistant, or tendencies are better.
Right. Okay. So there's one issue with that, you know, thought experiment there. So.
Okay.
Well, so, all right. Should we get you cooking here?
Yeah.
All right. So now, part of the premise here with an acupuncture treatment is that because we talked through all that, mm-hmm. now we've gotten to the source of some of the different issues, emotions, and things that create tension, that now this treatment's going to be better able to help you relax and release some of the tension that's producing some of the symptoms, right?
Well, that's how I felt when I went to Woodbury. It was like, yeah, I got the needles done, but I don't even...
Yep.
It's kind of like, I don't know how to describe it, but it was incomplete, I guess. I just...
Yeah. Are you relaxing and taking some deep breaths here?
Okay.
Gotta help out that process, right?
Mm-hmm.